5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy Iannelli here with another amazing podcast for you. Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin on the other side of the computer. Angel, this has been a week of weeks.
It has. I feel as if, even though we're not physically together, I gave you the cold through the Zoom link internet.
You know, I'll tell you what, these summer colds, thank God, not COVID, but still, lingering. But again, things could be much worse. I'm so excited about today's episode, Croc Nation. We continue on our theme, our module on fitness for the survivor. We went through a general podcast, just kind of giving you guys some ideas on fun things you could do to try to start a fitness program. And then we went specifically into some of the things that we all hate to hate, and that's things like high intensity training. And today we have a special guest, a dear friend of mine. Tell you a little story about Jim Quinn. So maybe about a decade ago, having never lifted a weight in my life other than maybe a backpack full of books, I went on the internet with a friend of mine looking for a strength coach because I didn't have the wherewithal to even know where to start. And I came across this local guy out in down over by Central Valley. And I went on his website, Jim Quinn. I'm saying, well, I like this guy. He's Irish, good looking guy. And then I started looking at his pictures, and he's a big ass bodybuilder. I mean, this guy was the real deal, competed Mr. Olympia, the whole thing, hung out with Lou Ferrigno and Arnold and the whole gang back in the 70s, the 80s and the 90s, well-known in the industry. And I said to my friend, Dan, I said, Dan, there's this guy on Highland Mills, but we can't go to him because, I mean, he's going to laugh at us. And Dan said, well, let's give him a try. Let's call him. And it began a decade-long friendship, one of the finest, sweetest, caring, most caring guys I've ever met, generous, cares more about my health than I think I care about my health. Took me with my high, my high thought process myself and my thought process thinking as a doctor, I know more than anybody else. I tore that apart, tore that to the ground and built me back up. And I can't say that I'm where I need to be, but I can say that I'm a million times better off because of Jim Quinn. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the intro. You remember what when you were kind of referring to a broken down to the ground, you remember when we made you try to sit in a chair and we realized that you couldn't triple flexion and sit in a chair properly? You remember that one?
Oh, I remember every freaking every pain and ache and mental insult. I remember every single one of them. But actually, that brings up a really important point, Coach, and one of the things that I think is really telling to your character. And that's that, you know, I think a lot of people think of strength coaches as I think the stereotype is, you know, big beefy guys that really don't know anything. They're just like go in and eat some iron and that's the end. And, you know, not really interested in safety or whatever. Jim is one of the smartest men I've ever met. And in addition, he has such a passion for fitness, such a passion for what he does. He is a voracious reader. He keeps up with the data. He's the same age as I am, 62, but he walks into the game every morning looking to find something new, finding something he doesn't know. These are all the reasons why I thought he'd be such a wonderful guest for our cancer survivors, because let's be honest, we're all afraid to lift weights. But before we get to that, Jim, and I know I'm going to embarrass you, there are so many things that I'm proud about knowing you, and I've said some of them. But really, your journey was very interesting into bodybuilding and into weightlifting and into strength. You didn't go a direct route. You weren't the 99-pound weakling who went over to Sears and bought the 99-pound, bench and sand weight, the Joe Weider thing. You actually were an amazing athlete, a recognized, Division I football player, went to the pros, had a shot at the pros, got injured. And only then did you consider an alternate path in fitness. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was initially really what I do most now, Tom, is being a strength and conditioning coach, sports performance enhancement. So then we didn't have the fitness magazine. So the aesthetic aspect of it, the compulsion of it now on the internet, that was a non-issue. We were like oblivious to how we looked. All we cared about was getting stronger and being a better athlete on the field. And, I went from all county running back in high school. And then I got to New Hampshire at about 190 pounds at 6'1". And I realized I was way too skinny. And I was. And so me and the strength coach got to be really, really good friends. And I walked in after 4 days of getting my butt kicked on the field by these bigger juniors and seniors. And I said, you and I need to figure this thing out quickly, like today. And I went headlong into it. And that's really what there's three guys at New Hampshire. Two of them I lifted with kind of on a regular basis as much as we could. And one went sixth round to Tampa Bay Bucks and he played. He's an offensive tackle. And Steve Doig was a third round, highest draft pick. He went to the Lions, played in the NFL for 5 or 6 years. And then I was a free agent with the Cowboys. So the three guys that did it the most and realized how important it was. And, were we a little bit ahead of the curve at 78, 82 with strength training, did for sports performance enhancement. Yeah, maybe, but for all three of us, it was the pathway to the higher level.
Exactly. So now you're with the Cowboys, this famous story of turning out Bates's lights on that hit. And then Coach Landry talks to you in the tunnel and it looks like you're going to make the roster and be special teams or be a fullback. And you make a tackle and all of a sudden you can't feel your hands. That must have been a scary moment.
It was, it was like a lightning bolt, a burner, and it went like right down my spine. And I was at fullback and it was just a kickout block. And the kid got so low. He was an outside linebacker for him. He was eventually a starter, Jeff Rohrer. And he just got so low and it happened so quickly that my helmet went down. And that was pretty much the start of a pretty bad spine. That got me released on waivers. Initially I was on injured reserve, but it was just a quick unintentional head hit that went really awry. But up until that point, it was going really well. I mean, I was kind of surprised. My dad always said they're not going to be as good as you think they are. And I was getting picked for special teams. I was the second guy in on kickoff coverage. And then a Monday scrimmage came and something went wrong and that was the end of that. But yeah, I got to, play and see whether I could play at that level. And my two other buddies at UNH, they did really well because they were physically prepared from strength and condition and really resistive training and mostly strength training.
And, I always say an angel is a very spiritual man as well. God closes one door to open up another. I mean, the Quinn character from your parents, and I've never gotten to meet them, but I feel that I have from all the wonderful stories you've shared about the way you were parented. There was no time for pity. There was no time for you, to jump, to run into the nearest bar and turn into an alcoholic. You went right back into the gym and into a new profession.
Right. Yeah, it was the first couple of weeks after, what eventually became cervical damage and, foraminectomies and a fused neck front and back. And then additionally lumbar. It was a little bit hard, but, when I look back on it now, it was the best thing I could have done to strengthen and then to symmetrically train really more with a bodybuilding kind of a regimen and programming, looking at a symmetrical body aesthetically so it functions symmetrically. And, it seemed to subside a lot of the pain and neuropathies that I had. It came to rear its head later on that, you know, that was really from so much body weight I was carrying to be a pro. But yeah, it was a rude awakening, you know, letting, you know, getting let go and being released and then, you know, given some time to heal. It just wasn't going to happen. I wasn't going to go back and hit people with my head for 17 miles an hour and they're coming at me about the same.
Yeah, no doubt. But you know what? Those long hours in the gym paid off because then your path went down a different road and you became a very, I know you'll never agree to this, but a very notable, well-known, well-thought of and well-respected bodybuilder. You knew all the greats and they respected you. And you partnered with some of the greats and you know, you were on magazine covers, you did tours of foreign countries. I mean, you were the real deal. You had a pro card. You know, you went to the big competitions and God bless you. And then from there, you know, we could do a whole podcast just on that, but then you became, you know, the strength guru to the stars. You know, you came back to Manhattan and you were like, you know, everybody was looking to train with Jim Quinn. You know, some of the hedge fund babies all the way to the pro professional wrestlers and all the people that Angel grew up rooting for, you were training. And thank God I found you with my friend Danny, because I swear to God, you are not just a coach to us, you're a dear friend. And that's why I invited you on today, Coach.
Great. Thank you. You know very well, I feel the same way about you and Dan. And Dan's still getting over here. He moved to Milford, you know that. So he gets over here. He was actually here this morning and he got to train at 8 o'clock with an athlete, a 1AA kid plays at Albany, 6'4", 300. And I didn't tell Dan until he walked in the door.
Oh, so probably not a good move, Coach. You know, Dan needs a little preparation.
Oh, but, my God. Yeah. And you know, so, you know, it really just transcended from being hurt, having to train to rehabilitate. And then starting to, you know, train people as a living. And a lot of it was, I kid around, spoil rich folks. And it was a lot of general public. It was some athletes, you know, me and Shane McMahon trained together for a very, very long time. And he's a phenomenal athlete. And I've been able to mingle a little bit with his son, who's now at D1 at Indiana. And then it kind of morphed into moving away from the personal training, and then COVID bounced us out of New York City in 2019. And then it really went back to young athletes and seventh graders and getting them in early. So it's kind of gone way back, way more so towards the sports performance and being a strength and conditioning coach, and a little bit farther away. But I really enjoy training guys like you and Dan and, you know, housewives that have just, you know, raise kids and have gotten out of shape. And it's a good mix. And, you know, I think, you know, you can get bored with doing anything and it can be redundant. So, you know, the like Monday night, these two seventh graders are coming in to meet and, you know, you get the real value and fun out of young kids and teaching them to do it right and getting a jump on it. You know, maybe the greatest line with regard to that is, Avery Fagenbaum, who teaches at Rutgers, and you and I've spoken about him, and he's like the pedagogy expert of the world. And he says, if you start your kid training in high school, you're 10 years too late. And yeah, and he's right, because the forces with which you're exposed to on a field of play with speed and power and regirding and agility and uneven surfaces, that they're more detrimental in the long run than anything you do in a supervised gym.
Yeah, and actually that's a really good segue because you know, Angel was showing some pictures of you when you were posing, and I'm sure the cancer survivor is saying, okay, doc, you know, why do you have this, you know, this guy on a cancer survivorship podcast talking about strength? And I think that's exactly the reason, is that, you know, the goal today, you know, is to really, again, make sure that the survivor that's listening to these podcasts know that they're listening to someone who is experienced and has the reputation and credentials to speak to such a subject. But more importantly, our goal isn't to make our cancer survivors bodybuilders, but just to take the first step to take away that fear and trepidation of getting strong. You know, the concept of getting strong, you know, to a cancer survivor is probably very foreign because they feel strong enough because of their personal struggle and battle with cancer. And I agree with that. And this podcast is the first to credit them for their journey and for their toughness. But this podcast is also very focused and solemnly sworn to try to provide tools to the survivors to make their survivorship better, to make their survivorship a more higher quality, give them a higher quality of life, a higher quality of survivorship. And we do modules. And this module on fitness, it would be not just unethical, but probably immoral if I were not to begin the discussion of how important it is for a survivor who historically has been pushed away from doing anything heavy or anything strength related, especially our breast cancer survivors, to actually start breaking down that wall and to become more open and suggestive to the idea of starting a strength program. So that's really the meat of it. And Jim, I also wanted to bring in your own personal history with cancer on your mom and how it affected you and how you might give some advice, you know, to the survivor to break down those misconceptions.
You know, and that was a great conversation, Tom, on your part, because, you know, with me, obviously, that was then, and I'm 62 now, and you evolve, and you have to evolve from, you know, being blunt, you know, vanity and physique and aesthetics, and then it has to become longevity and wellness and health and mobility, range of motion of joints and flexibility, re-lengthening muscle groups, being able to regird yourself if you fall. You know, so I completely, you know, understand, you know, what you just said about that. And yeah, my mom has had myelodysplasia probably since she's mid-50s. And I remember my dad coming into a gym I was working at, and he just looked so stressed. And I never saw him. He was such a tough, straight, tough Irishman. And I knew something was wrong immediately. And he walked over to me when I was training somebody. And she's okay. She's fine. She's a survivor. She, you know, it's a very slow grade of leukemia, and she has to get blood transfusions. Unfortunately, recently she fell. Therein lies a good anecdotal story of, had she been moving a little bit, the last that I saw her, me and my brother, we got her outside. We got her to walk. She lives in kind of rural sedentary Georgia. And for her, walking was like an athlete sprinting 400 meters at his high school track. She might've walked about 40 or 50 yards and she was done. Well, there's the deconditioning aspect. And so again, you know, per what you had said, let's talk about getting out of the chair. Let's talk about maybe being on the walker, the progression to a cane, the progression of walking fairly steady, then walking better and a little bit faster, then maybe even eventually being able to jog or run and then repeat, you know. And so, you know, what we've had to do with strength and conditioning regimens and programming is so much more now. And a lot of it, I believe, is applicable to your folks, to, you know, cancer survivors and, you know, dealing with the bad aspects of, you know, whatever treatment they're going through. And being as strong as you can. And, you know, when you read about it, and I looked at a pretty good amount of studies in the last couple of days just to prep myself even more. And it's basically resistive training pro, very pro resistive training. And so, you know, the healthier you're going to be before treatment, the more mobile you're going to be after treatment. And again, it really doesn't have to be a weight training regimen. It could be calisthenic. It could be planking and doing something static. It could be a woman doing an incline push-up on her sofa and then having to regress and go down to your knee And so that's kind of the good part about me now at 62, that A, personally, I've had to deal with 20 orthopedic surgeries and I've had to come back every time. And then B, I've had some sedentary, you know, general public that have been suffering with immobility and obesity for long periods of time. And we now know how to progress them safely and get them moving again.
Absolutely. And you more than anyone, although, you know, it's not your time yet for cancer, I will say that between all of the orthopedic injuries and you know, the repercussions from the life that you've lived, you can understand a cancer survivor's limitations and how to work around those limitations.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if there's some disability, then you think about something easy, something static, something isometric, all right? Holding a plank, holding a push-up in the elbow extended position. So, you know, before you're stretching, before eccentric. It depends on where they're at, and anything is better. I've had people walk on a treadmill for a minute. My mom walked for about 50 yards and that was it for the end of the day. For her, that was equivalent, there's a great analogy that somebody getting out of a chair that's been post-treatment, post-malady, whatever it is, even, you know, post-knee or post-hip replacement, that them getting out of a chair and squatting themselves is probably equivalent to a really good athlete in my gym doing a 3-rep set of a barbell squat. And I mean heavy. That's
absolutely doubt about it. Now, Coach, there's another subject I want to talk about, very sensitive, and it's very important for our survivors to know this. There are many people that tout themselves as strength and conditioning coaches. You've done the work. You have the degree. You have the certifications and the credentials. When someone does decide that they want to go forward, a cancer survivor, and start a strength program, what would you recommend they look for when they're looking at the coach? What are the certifications that you feel would give them the right and privilege to train that survivor?
Of course, I'm going to be a little bit biased. So all of us have to have a health science undergrad to be what's called, and again, people call themselves strength coaches. And, you know, it's basically a 4-hour test and about 600 hours of study post health science bachelor's. And then you can be called a certified strength and conditioning coach. Certainly, when you look at some of these studies, you're being referenced to exercise physiologists. You're being referenced to somebody who has a bachelor's, a BS in biomechanics. These people are equally good. Somebody that has a PT, in most states, that's the 4-year health science undergrad and 2 years and being state certified. Basically, I'm a fan, as you are, of Alphabet Soup or having those acronyms behind your name. If somebody has an oncological expertise, like a hand therapist does for a wrist problem like carpal tunnel, let's say, that's certainly even more beneficial. But, you know, I know you'd said that, and I appreciate you saying that more than you know. You know, I kind of do the due diligence. I've had many AIDS patients. I've had post-stroke. I've, you know, picked up people that were in a wheelchair and put them in a machine and made them train, you know, so that they didn't feel quote unquote handicapped. So I've always kind of, you know, pushed the envelope a little bit with extending my base of knowledge. But, you know, I like Alphabet Soup behind the name. I do like people, you know, that have a very specific oncological aspect to it or a learning curve towards it. That's what I would recommend. You know, just moving for folks, when you think about physical therapy, the acronym, the antiquated acronym was RICE, right? The first word was rest. Oh, God, you're beat up. Your body's traumatized. You know. Whatever the malady is. So now you got to rest and then ice and press and elevate. It was moved to mice. Right? So even pre-treatment for these folks and then post-treatment, they have to start moving again. And, you know, everything that comes up. So, you know, fibrosis as it pertains to radiological fibrosis, edema, excess water, you know, as a natural reaction to the trauma. All these things get better. And when I did look at a lot of research studies, almost everything was really, really pro-resistive training. Just case by case, somebody that's listening, if they're walking their dog, that's movement. It's you know, getting up and down and doing a bodyweight squat off of a couch while you're doing networks, that might be enough for them. Walking, by the way, gravity vertically, drag in front of us, we look at it from an athletic standpoint, ground reaction force, pushing off the ground, that might be enough. And again, it might be down to the mailbox and back. And then you keep progressing. So you eventually overload. But
you know, I wanted to say to you guys, you know what they call someone in my job who does not have the alphabet soup?
No.
They call him a convict.
a lot of us are considered plate changers and spotters, but you and I both have always been, we've always had great conversation and, you know, extending our base of knowledge and, you know, being comfortable. You know, what do you do with somebody that has a metastatic bone, right? You know, where it's the weakening, the radiation maybe contributed to that or added to that. How much of a load are you going to put axial on them, one end of the bone to the other, and then know exactly, you know, what the outcome is going to be? Are they going to be able to substantial load? So it's a very, very specific thing that all these folks are dealing with. You know, we've dealt with it with my mom. My mom's done very, very well with it. She's a tough Irish woman that raised five kids. Lord knows we ran her ragged the whole time that we were in that household. Made her tough for, you know, fighting the cancer, but or the leukemia. But, it's a case-by-case basis. But, of course, I'm pro-resistive training. You know, of course, I call it gasping. You know, when you read even, you know, cardiovascular exercise, aerobics, per se, you know, getting your heart rate up to 55 to 75% of max heart rate, hope that's not too sciencey. Even pushing harder and higher intensity of that and doing something that's somewhat gasping, you're uncomfortable, you're out of oxygen debt, stopping and recovering. So even—
Yeah, no, I love it. There are two things that you said that I want to focus on. Number one, comfortability. So my Croc Nation, our beloved survivors, the thing that Jim does, and you know, again, obviously Jim is one human. There's many, many qualified people probably where you live, close to where you can be, that can fill this role. But the defining characteristic that Jim brought to me was when I walked in, I felt safe. I developed a friendship. I knew that he was never going to do anything to me that was going to put me in danger. And I knew he was never going to do anything. He was going to push me as far as he could push me. He knew me better than I knew myself. And his constant quest to look at how to do better, how to make changes, not to do the same thing over and over and over again, is something that's the most important thing, the second most important thing. So the first thing you say, all right, Dr. E, I agree with you. I agree with Angel. I agree with Coach. I have to start getting stronger. I have to get a strength program. The second thing is you have to find a person that is going to fill that role, that they're not just going to be someone who's going to program something for you. They're going to be someone who is going to befriend you, care about you, want you to do better, and continually trying to customize a program that's right for you in view of your special circumstances, your metastatic cancer, or your post-radiation issues or swelling, or your post-chemotherapy neuropathy. This guy, Jim Quinn, represents a group of people that you need to engage. And then the third thing you need to know is that the program is actually fun. And this is coming from someone who never lifted a weight. And we know Angel always has the last word and he'll tell us his experiences, but he made it fun. I mean, everything was functional. You know, it wasn't going in, you know, to a gym and trying to lift 200 pounds on the bench or to squat 200 pounds. I had to earn getting into the squat rack. It took years of just doing goblet squats before he even put me on a Smith machine, which isn't even in the rack. It took forever to do some real deadlifting. It took forever, to perfect it. Not that I ever did, but the band walks and putting on weighted vests and, you know, doing El Diablo, which was a machine that we used to make fun of to try to stretch our backs out. Jim Quinn is the guy you need. Maybe not Jim Quinn, but someone like Jim Quinn to start your program. Angel Santana, you always get the last word, my brother.
I think this is a great opportunity for us to, you know, get together and learn more about the way that, you know, Jim was so articulate in how to express how he trains people, but more importantly, how he got involved. I have a question actually for Jim. My question to him was, when you started your journey, when did you know this was a path you were going to take, meaning bodybuilding and everything?
When I got released by the Cowboys, that was 83. I was 23, Angel. And I was banged up. I had a cervical and a lumbar spinal issue, compression, nerve damage, neuropathy. So it was really just rehabbing. And at that point, I think I was even off my insurance from my dad. So I was kind of on my own. So that was really just rehabilitative, to go back in the gym. And that then it kind of morphed into somebody asking me to compete. You know, you got good genetics. You know, our gym in Long Island had, you know, some powerlifters and bodybuilders and athletes, a couple of the New York Jets. Jerry Cooney trained there. He was a heavyweight pro boxer. We had a very athletic gym. And so, it just progressed through there. It took a long time. It took me like 8 or 9 times to turn pro. But it was probably the best thing for me because, you know, the programming was so symmetrical oriented from an aesthetic standpoint that benefited my musculoskeletal system now that I look back on it now. But that was really, you know, the reasoning behind it was, you know, because I was banged up and I'd gotten released on a waiver.
You know, and I will say this, you know, I say this a lot on my podcast and I also emulate it here. You know, we all have a gift. We have a talent and not many people can say that they've fulfilled dreams that they wanted to do. And it seems to me, just being in your presence, you've had an opportunity to try and follow those dreams. And even though for some people, when that dream was taken away from you, it actually began your journey, the journey that you wanted, that you didn't realize you wanted maybe, but it was the journey that was selected for you to help change other people's lives. And you, my friend, are a treasure to so many other people, but not only to the people that you train, but I think it's going to be a huge impact on this show and to many survivors to know that people like you exist. So for that, I'm very grateful that you were on the show today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, you learn as you get older, Angel. It's not what you get, it's what you give. And, you know, maybe that comes, Tom, the same way with, you know, being now 62 and looking back and going, I lived a self-absorbed younger life. And then you get to an awakening and a spirituality. Me and Tom have great conversations with that. His training partner, Dan's the same way. He comes up with some gems in the gym and, you know, it's really, you know, what you, you know, service for people and how you're benefiting really mankind and society. So I get great benefit. I have people that, you know, are so low self-esteem and low mobility and, you know, ready to pack it in, so to speak. And then I have seventh grade athletes that are just getting going on their careers. And, you know, it's a good mix, and it's fun. And I, you know, I get it to do it in my house. I have no commute. And in Buddhism, you learn that there's a dharma, which is basically your role in life. I think somehow, some way, maybe I got the luck of the Irish that I thought it was football. Then it kind of segued into bodybuilding. Now it's based, it really is helping people and being a strength coach, helping athletes be their best, and then helping like the general public with all their issues, whatever they may be, and helping them. So it's, you know, you get lucky sometimes. You got, you know, you kind of follow the timelessness is a term. And when you're not looking at the clock and then you see 4 hours went by and it went quick because you like it, you love it.
Coach, I have so much more to ask you, but we're going to have to ask you to do us a favor and come back on. You sure. are the GOAT of what you do, the greatest of all time. You are the Tom Brady of strength and conditioning. Next time when we have you on, maybe in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about the gym and your regimens and things like that. But in the meantime, Croc Nation, know that this is a starting point. Do not be afraid of strength. Strength is your friend. There are people out there like Jim who want to help you, and we will help you find your Jim Quinn. Angel Santana, thank you for everything you do for us. Have faith, let it begin.
No problem. And just to point out to everybody out there, do not worry. We're going to put his website, all his information. I got so much here. I'm looking at it, and you got to see these pictures. But we're going to have everything from his Instagram to his website. You will have access to see where Jim Quinn is at.
Angel, you're going to steal him on your podcast, I'm sure, one day.
Of course.
You're going to finish this. So this is to everybody out there that's dealing with what they're dealing with. So you're going to finish to the dot, dot, dot. Once begun.
Halfway done.
Well, once begun, half done. Halfway done. It's basically squatting off the sofa, then walking with a cane. You might have to go with a walker if that's your scenario. We've been there. We've been there, right?
God bless you, Jim. Yep. Thank you for everything. Croc Nation, every episode is about you, what we can do to help you. This is a great, great podcast. It's going to continue. We're going to bring Jim back on in a couple of weeks. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about high intensity training. Our dear beloved survivors, and on behalf of the board of directors, Angel Santana, Rod Freeman, Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, we love you. We adore you. We wish you nothing but the best. We wish you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God be with you. God bless you. We love you. Amen. Peace.
Thanks, man.